Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The fortunate King Parikshit, inquiring further, said, "O Brahmana, please describe in full detail, how and where the mind has to be applied and how the conception can be fixed so that the dirty things in the person's mind can be removed." So if you repeat each phrase after me. The fortunate King Parikshit, inquiring further, said, "O Brahmana, please describe in full detail how and where the mind has to be applied and how the conception can be fixed so that the dirty things in a person's mind can be removed." So let's find out. This is a wonderful purport. Purport: the dirty things in the mind of a conditioned soul are the root cause of all troubles for him. A conditioned soul is surrounded by the manifold miseries of material existence, but on account of his gross ignorance, he is unable to remove the troubles due to dirty things in the heart. They're accumulated during the long prison life in the material world. He is actually meant to serve the will of the Supreme Lord, but on account of the dirty things in the heart, he likes to serve his concocted desires. These desires, instead of giving him any peace of mind, create new problems and thus bind him to the cycle of repeated birth and death. These dirty things of fruitive work and empiric philosophy can be removed only by association with the Supreme Lord. The Lord, being omnipotent, can offer his association by his inconceivable potencies. Thus, persons who are unable to pin their faith on the personal feature of the Absolute are given a chance to associate with his Virat Rupa, or the cosmic impersonal feature of the Lord. The cosmic impersonal feature of the Lord is a feature of his unlimited potencies. Since the potent and the potencies are identical, even the conception of his impersonal cosmic feature helps the conditioned soul to associate with the Lord indirectly and thus gradually rise to the stage of perfect contact. Maharaj Parikshit has already was already directly connected with the personal feature of Lord Sri Krishna, and as such he had no need to inquire from Sukadev Goswami about where and how to apply in the mind in the impersonal Virat Rupa of the Lord. But he inquired after a detailed description of the matter for the benefit of others who are unable to conceive of the transcendental feature of the Lord as a form of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. The non-devotee class of men cannot think of the personal feature of the Lord because of their poor fund of knowledge. The personal form of the Lord, Rama or Krishna, is completely revolting to them. They have a poor estimation of the potency of the Lord. In the Bhagavad Gita 9.11, it is explained by the Lord himself that people with a poor fund of knowledge deride the Supreme Personality of Godhead, taking him to be a common man. Such men are ignorant of the inconceivable potency of the Lord. By the inconceivable potency of the Lord, he can move in human society or any other society of living beings and yet remain the same omnipotent Lord without deviating in the slightest from his transcendental position. So for the benefit of men who are unable to accept the Lord in his personal eternal form, Maharaj Parikshit inquired from Sukadeva Goswami how to fix the mind on him in the beginning. And the Goswami replied in detail as followed, which will be continued in the forthcoming verses. But I think there's a lot in this purport, actually. You know, dirty things of the heart is really a sort of a nice expression, which I really relate to, actually. But anyway, Om Vijnana Timurandhasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chakshom Militam Yena Tasmay Sri Gurave Namaha Vansha Kopa Trubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyeva Cha Padidam Pavanabhyo Vaisnavabhyo Namo Namaha. Well, it's I also want to give respect to Sri Prabhupada's disciples here, Smarhari Prabhu. And I think maybe, yeah, thank you for coming. And to this rendition of the... Yes. Yes, it's the word got out, as they say. And all the sages came. Sorry. So you're all here. You're the sages, actually. And that's a fact. Knowingly or unknowingly, we don't know who we are, isn't it? It's sort of like that. It's an experiment with ourselves. This Bhakti Yoga process of Srila Prabhupada's mercy. And there's so much mercy here, actually. Because how can such a place like the Bhaktivedanta Manor continue through such difficulties, such ups and downs, and in its career, you could say? You know, it's very interesting. Like they tried to close the whole temple at one time, the village, because of the problems with traffic and people blocking up the village and goodness knows what. So in the end, they put some sort of injunction on us, and then through that there is a whole process of establishing the manor again through the law courts of the land, which was very interesting, because the person who ultimately, even through an appeal, happened to be a layman, Church of England, lay preacher. And that's very interesting. His name was Selman Gummer, and he somehow or other, he gave us the decision onto the matter to stay open, providing that we could provide a proper access. So instantly, our congregation, amazing congregation, gave us support. They donated thousands of pounds to buy land, of which we had to construct by a certain time. Amazing. And it happened. It was just through sheer determination that the manor has come through to what it is now, in the second stage, where we have the Haveli building, and we have to maintain somehow or other, by the grace of our supporters and the grace of the Lord and Prabhupada's inspiration, to continue and distribute the mercy at this place of Bhaktivedanta Manor. And so what we find out here is a place that where the dirty things of the heart, it's a hospital, it's a special hospital for everyone who comes here. And they're coming through this so-called allowance of the government to that we can worship in such a way we can be more intimate with each other, actually. And this was the big difficulty for the devotees, because they're very expressive and they show their affection and also show their disapprovals also. But that's their mercy too, because we're helping each other. So in this verse it says here, the dirty things of the conditioned soul are the root cause of the troubles for all of him. A conditioned soul is surrounded by the manifold miseries of material existence, but on account of the gross ignorance, he is unable to remove the troubles due to dirty things in the heart, which have accumulated during the long prison life of them in the material world. Now that's an interesting part. There was a question one day here. It says, how can we say it's a prison world? It's a very beautiful place. There's so many things are beautiful. You know, they see the sun and the rain. It is all, and this how recycle of the trees. They lose their leaves, then they come back to life. It's a miracle. You know, this is amazing. But of course, it is amazing. But it's still called Dukkhalayam. It's a special prison that can be attractive. And even the prison mates, they seem to want to stay in the prison if they got a nice cell, isn't it? So if you feel you're in a fortunate position of opulence or whatever it is, it's still a prison cell. You're still in a prison. So we need to reflect on these things and understand that actually it is a prison, but there's a chance of coming out. And if we follow the rules and regulations of the prison management, which is, of course, the Supreme Lord himself and his representatives that have come to help us come out of this prison, you know, the spiritual masters, spiritual guides, the gurus, you know, and the super soul himself, of course, within our heart. Prabhupada says in Bhagavad Gita, nice verses, Bhagavad Gita 9:30-31, there's never time when we are not without help. The seemingly, even not in association of devotees, is still there, because the super soul within the heart, if we continue to serve him with love, he gives understanding. So, either with devotees or without devotees, the Lord is still there. He will give you inspiration from within. It's not a case of the thing. But we don't take that as a thing. You know, I'm in touch with Super Soul. I can, you know, I know what I'm about. Because that may separate us from that which is actually available. That I don't need a guru. I don't need advice. You know, it can separate us. You know, I'm okay. It's not that way. We need each other. Because we're all together. Because Krishna put us together. So-called elevated souls and so-called not-so-elevated souls. We need each other. Actually, one preaches, the one hears, or vice versa. Both are important aspects of devotional service, hearing and chanting, speaking, asking questions, as King Parikshit did here. He said, what shall I do? What am I supposed to do? What's my duty? And that, his resolve to find out and resolve the situation of being enlightened and finding out the business of the living entity in this world, is initiated this wonderful sage, Sukadev Goswami, coming to speak this Bhagavatam. It's amazing because this is the first time that Sukadev Goswami's ever spoken the Bhagavad Gita after hearing it from his father. So just like that, he remembers. He remembers in such a way, but the way he remembers is because of inquiry. He's had this inquiry from the great King Parikshit. This inquiry has stimulated, though, his complete memory of what he's heard from his father, Vyasadeva. So Sukadev Goswami now has a chance to show his merit to his Vyasadeva, his father, and express and preach to King Parikshit this Bhagavatam. So this wonderful blessing here. So this is to get us out of this long prison life of the material world. He is actually meant to serve the will of the Supreme Lord. But on account of the dirty things in the heart, he likes to serve his concocted desires. These desires, instead of giving him peace of mind, create new problems and bind him to the cycle of repeated birth and death. Do you know, this reminds me of me. I remember that certainly in my early part of life, my desires was this attraction for woman. And it was like an amazing thing. Because when the body changes, all of a sudden, these desires come. When I was a little boy, I used to believe in Jesus and God and all that, and used to be very attracted to all that sort of thing. But then all of a sudden, when this change of body came, I became attracted to other things. You know, and sport and all drinking, so many things. And I used to meditate on them. That was my meditation. You know, and it was a real nuisance because it caused me so much pain, actually, because of attachment to these things. So much pain because I'd experienced them. I'd savored them. I thought they were great. But then when it came to it, it caused me so much difficulty because nothing seemed to work out right. It all fell apart. And then I was looking again for that right person, this right person, to win the match. You know, all these things of the material existence. It was a forest, a dark forest of material enjoyment. And so the dirty things of fruitive work and empiric philosophy can be removed by association with the Supreme Lord. That's interesting. So fruitive work and empiric philosophy. So so-called great philosophers of this world, though they may be very clever and they can speak in so many ways, you know, Mayavadis are good at this, you know, it's based on a concoction that suits their false ego, that they're God, or that actually I am superior, I have a wonderful intellect, I'm great, I can do what I want, I'm in the mode of goodness, you know. And that pride defeats the person, actually. This pride in their God-given abilities, that they think that actually they're superior, and that cuts them off from any learning, because nobody can tell them anything. And what happens when you tell somebody, you know, about something? I know. Shishi Radhagokul Nandakija, Shishi Gaur Nitai Kija, Shishi Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman. And before you can say or describe something, oh, I know that, I know. But if they don't know, because the one who says I know, it's a positive symptom of they don't know. So it's the Lord, being omnipotent, can offer his association by his inconceivable potencies. Thus persons unable to pin their faith on a personal feature of the absolute truth are given a chance to associate with the Virat Rupa, or the cosmic impersonal feature of the Lord. The cosmic impersonal feature of the Lord is a feature of his unlimited potencies. And we can see that in the Bhagavad Gita. It's a whole chapter on seeing the this impersonal form, this, I don't know, Virat Rupa, yeah, the cosmic feature. And so, but he wanted to, Arjuna wanted to show people that actually this form of the Lord is all pervasive, but is destroying, creating, giving birth of so many more living entities, so many worlds, so many universes. And it was to impress us that actually that there is a universal form, that but it consists of horrible features which has been created by the Lord in this prison house. And so the Virat Rupa is an example, actually, that we can see that there's something greater than us, and that we can admire it, actually. It's a gazing of the opulence of the Lord, something greater than us. It's like when you, I don't know if you've ever sat on a seashore, there's cliffs behind and there's the sea in front of you. You get this amazing feeling of feeling really small, that this nature that we see and exhibited around us, and you can see it today even, that it looks very attractive. It's wonderful. And but at the same time, then we come in contact with that which is not so wonderful, which was, you could say, this COVID culture that we have now. Because it's brought forth another culture, a culture of fear of the material world and death. So the place is Dukkhalayam. It's very pretty, but also it's to really wake us up that actually there is a place that we should go home to, that is not of this material world, that is that of the original nature of the soul. So, since potent and potencies are identical, even the conception of the impersonal feature, the conditioned soul, associating with the Lord indirectly, and we can thus rise to the stage of impersonal personal contact. And so, it's the only way we can make a personal contact with the Supreme Lord is to feel that we're small and there's something greater than us, and that something's happening, and so maybe this is God, the nature is God, and so I can worship that nature. So it brings you into contact with the trigger that triggers a worship of something greater than us, and not that we are the great and that that we are God, but actually there's a feeling of something greater than me. And so Maharaj Parikshit was already connected with the personal feature of Lord Krishna, and as such he had no need to inquire from Sukadeva Goswami of where and how to apply the mind in an impersonal Virupa. Yeah, he saw Krishna in his original situation in the womb. Krishna protected him. He had that amazing intimate experience. He knew of it. And that was there with him, but not only there with him from what that personal experience, it was there with his forefathers and their pastimes that she heard so much about. This gave him power. It gave him the power to understand the nature of the world and the nature of great souls, and how he himself became a Mahatma. He was a great soul himself by his association first with the Lord and with those of his relatives who were also great souls. He saw by their example. Maharaj Parikshit was directly connected with the personal feature of the Lord, so it says here. So he knew that it says from Sukadeva to apply their mind to a Virat Rupa form of the Lord. It was just another exhibition of his opulences, you could say, of this material existences. And it says the non-devotee class of men cannot think of a personal feature of the Lord because of the poor fund of knowledge. The personal feature of the Lord, like Rama, Krishna, is completely revolting to them. They are they have a poor estimation of the potency of the Lord. Yeah, they seem the Lord. They see the Lord through their limited eyes, but they think that if it's a human form, he's limited, but he's in a human form that is unlimited, that has his own transcendental potency. It's eternal and it's full of bliss. So they can't see it because it's like them, you know. So maybe they're God. And, you know, there's this rationale starts to come out of the impersonalist and the Mayavadis, that maybe I'm God, that maybe this is the way, I've got this knowledge of Shastra and so many other things, so many other knowledges. So it's to explain by the Lord himself that people with poor fund of knowledge deride the Supreme Personality of Godhead, taking him to to be a common man. So that's where the Mayavadis come in. I'm a common man, so I must be God. Such men are ignorant of the inconceivable potency of the Lord. By the inconceivable potency that he can move in human society or any other society of living beings. So we have the Lord in his many expansions in like different forms of Varaha, you know, a turtle form. So many forms. He could do anything. And they all serve a purpose. They're all inconceivable in their nature. This is God, you know, in this form of a fish, even. And so it says, without deviating from his transcendental position, he's still the Lord, whatever form he takes. So for the benefit of men who are unable to accept the Lord in his personal eternal form, Maharaj Parikshit inquired from Sukadeva Goswami how to fix the mind on him in the beginning. And Goswami replied in detail. So this introductory chapter will go and explain. It's a first lesson, you could say, in Bhakti Yoga, that how the Lord appears in special forms, the Vira Rupa form or whatever. It comes from within the heart. The realization that I'm not so great, but there is something greater than me. And it starts off with a Vira Rupa form by saying this nature is more powerful than I am. It must come from somewhere. And that it could be worshipable. So they worship nature. And I think I've tried to cover all the points, but there are other points, and there hopefully are questions. It's just we've got a little bit of time. If there's anybody like to question anything, I talked about many things, especially dirty bits of the heart, which I really identify with. So it's a special situation here. Yes, Srinivas Prabhu.
You just mentioned in your class about the Lord has many forms. He appears in many ways.
Yeah.
There's an interesting story Jangi Prabhu tells how there was one prostitute. She was considered the most chaste prostitute in the world. But Lakshmi Devi, she told Lord Narayan, how is this possible? So Lord Narayan said, I'll go and test her out. So he came as a leper.
Came as a?
As a leper. To this prostitute's house. So he knocked on the door, and the servant opened the door. And then the servant told the prostitute who's come. The prostitute said, well, he's come, so we have to look after him. So the leper came in, and the prostitute made arrangement for him to have nice rest, everything. And then she cooked everything. She cooked something for him, and then after he had eaten, he gave some portion to her, and apparently his finger fell in the food. So the leper's finger fell in the food. Yeah. So the prostitute was so chaste that she ate everything. The Lord Vishnu was so pleased with that behavior of the prostitute that he revealed himself to her, saying, I'm very pleased with you, what benediction would you like? And she said, I want to become your husband. I want to become your wife. So then Lord Vishnu became the river Gandaki. She became the river Gandaki, and Lord Vishnu became the Shalagram in the river Gandaki.
Oh. Yeah, thanks, Srinivas. So, yeah. Yeah, how can we understand the Lord being a stone, you know, or the archivicar that we have here, the deities here? You know, it's inconceivable to the materialist, isn't it? The personal form of the Lord is his most amazing exhibition, actually. That he comes here himself, and he can do what he wants. And you know, I did have a nice quote somewhere, but amongst all my paraphernalia, I'm not sure where I put it. But anyway, there is. But the amazing thing is that Arjun, how he comes in this world with Krishna for each incarnation. To serve Krishna and never go back to the spiritual world, but he just serves him in the material world as his devotee, going through this wonderful pastimes in worlds in so many different places, so many different universes. This is really Arjuna is a wonderful example of sacrifice, that he wants to stay with Krishna no matter where he is. Doesn't matter. Life after life. Can you imagine the life of dilemma? But it's blissful to them because of love. Krishna's conquered their heart. So even in awkward situations, it's enough, it's okay, because their love is so strong, their bond is so strong. You know, it don't matter where I am, you know, even if you handle me or embrace me roughly, I'm yours life after life, you know, unconditionally, wherever we can be together, it doesn't matter. This is love. This is what we should be trying to achieve in our austerities. Whatever you do, do it for me. Even the difficulties you go through in this world is just another expression of my love. That do it for me as an act of service. Tolerate. Know that this is mercy, that you'll get knowledge from your difficulties. Then you can help others who are also having difficulties, because what you've experienced can be help to others. Like this, you know, we should understand that also our difficulties can have a positive effect. That we can help others, we can empathize with others. We know their difficulties and we share with them. And, you know, certainly, whatever difficulties you've had in this world, it's a blessing, because then you can share and empathize with others. Give them solace. You know, and so that's important. So don't run away from difficulties. They're good for you. It's just you got to do what you can do, you know, and with the ability that you've got. And that's what we say to you, your children, isn't it? Have you done your best? You say, yeah, well, yes, I did. Even it's so-called failure. But it's never a failure, not in Krishna consciousness. Because we get knowledge, our ignorance is destroyed. You know, so it's all positive. You know, it can be utilized for everyone's sake. Ladies, that have to be the last question now, because we have to leave the temple. Okay. Yeah. You switch it on. Is it on?
Can you hear me?
That's it. Yeah.
Thank you so much. That was so lovely. It was just so wonderful to hear. It's very wonderful. I just have a question. How do we? What kind of meditation should we maintain in order to remember that we are very small? At the same time, we should have a big heart to give all the love unconditionally.
Yeah, but it's to know we're insignificant, that we can't help anybody unless we ourselves who need are the person that needs help. But what, how you can help is being a listener, but not necessarily the solution. This is what the Samaritans do, that you usually help a person by helping them help themselves. Now the Samaritans are a very interesting group of people. They're trying to say that they let people express their difficulties. That's the first thing they do. So in other words, it's sharing halves the suffering, actually, to be able to express your suffering. It's just an important thing with Samaritans. But they will never give any suggestions on what to do in a situation. And they say, well, what have you tried to do? How do you think you can handle this? They'll actually ask the question back to the person. Well, you know, I was thinking about doing this and that. Well, and then they said, well, what else do you think? And then gradually this person, instead of seeing that that they're helpless and there's nothing we can do and it's the end of my life, you know, I just want to commit suicide or something. But they start to look at solutions that the person then, and what they are, they're supporters of that person. So they say, well, you know, what do you want to do next? You know, what do you think the best thing is to do? They'll ask the person themselves. In this way, most people know that actually, that just the very expression of their difficulties, and it's shared, is helping them. They start to feel relief. And then they can start to answer with some clarity. So our thing is that we don't have the answers for everyone, but we support each other and we listen to each other and somehow support in that way. Because, you know, if somebody's done something wrong, they ultimately, or so-called wrong, that they know that they've done wrong. You know, do you think you should have acted like that? And they say, oh no, maybe not. You know, and it's sort of like that. That's the way you help people. You know, you let people express themselves and talk about their situation, and at the same time, let them come up with a solution. And you know, especially if you're in authority, it's the most difficult thing sometimes, because you're asking the people to do things they don't necessarily want to do, you know. But you know, it's the thing that's saying that everybody's has to do their duty, you know, in that way. That's why we're here. We're in this world because we wanted to do our own thing. It's not suiting us. So that's the best way you can help each other, by hearing each other, and that's the best thing. And let us all come up with our solution, because generally that's the way. If you've done something wrong, you say sorry. And then usually what happens, oh, you say, well, yeah, maybe I was a bit strong with you. I'm sorry that I got angry with you. You know, what happens solutions come. And you know, so when we say sorry is a wonderful word. I'm sorry, I'm not doing as you want. I'll do my best. Is a good start. And hearing people and their problems. But you know, I don't know if it really answers the question. But we really know within ourselves what we should be doing, we just got to admit it. Like King Parachit, that was his breakthrough. He'd realised he'd done wrong. So what happened? He asked the question, what do I do about it? And that's what we've got now with this first chapter of the thing. This is what the process is, the first steps in realisation. And we've got to go through the Bhagavatam to find out what's the final solution, what comes of it. But we've got to be a patient. So let's find out more in the next episode.
Can I ask one more question?
Not really, no. No, it's got to stop here now. Because there are people waiting to come in, you see. We don't belong to ourselves. But thank you.